The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights.
Welcome to the showdown brought to you by CaptainSave.com. Make sure you sign up at CaptainSave.com to get deals on what you love, need, and want. Get that email over to CaptainSave.com to get your daily specials in your inbox. Big, big week in the world of mixed martial arts. I spent some time in Anaheim, California, covering UFC 121, where Cain Velasquez made history, defeating Brock Lesnar to become the new UFC heavyweight champion. And as many people know or don't know, the first Mexican-American, well, technically the first modern-day Mexican-American heavyweight champion. We'll get into that a little bit later on the show, but today Dana White, the UFC, made a huge announcement, long-anticipated announcement, where the WEC officially merges with the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and that will take place in January of 2011. The remaining two shows for the WEC, which is 51 and 52, both in November and December respectively, we'll continue to go on. Joining me right now on the line is a guy that we had to get on the air whenever the business of mixed martial arts reaches a peak in the mainstream media. Managing editor for MMAPayout.com, one of my favorite websites that I surf at least once, twice, maybe three times a day, Kelsey Philpott. Kelsey, what's going on, my man?
Not much, Joe. Just coming off a very exciting day, great day for MMA, and you know, I'm just happy to be on the line with you to talk about this series of events here.
Well, you and I have spoken about the merger or my idea in terms of the WC merging into the UFC at length. I mean, at least for a year and a half. So here it is. It finally happens. Dana makes the announcement. They are going to amalgamate the bantamweight and featherweight divisions and perhaps introduce the flyweight division in the future. But in the meantime, they're bringing over their champions, which gives the UFC a total of seven champions, which I believe they can alternate in terms of meeting their aggressive pay-per-view schedule. When you first heard the news and all the information that was part of that call, what went through your mind? And give us a prediction of what this means for the business of MMA.
Well, I think probably the first thing that went through my mind was, gosh, it's about damn time. I mean, it's been a long time coming. You and I have been talking about this merger, the potential for a merger, for at least 18 to 24 months now. And, you know, I don't want to speculate as to why it's taken this long, but it's here now, and it's just nice to finally see this come to fruition. And I think the reason why we've been talking about this for so long is it just makes sense for what the UFC is trying to achieve in terms of its long-term business objectives. It wants to grow. It wants to increase the number of shows that it puts on every year. And we've seen the trend over the last 3 or 4 years going from 15 to 18 to 20 shows, 25. You know, they're looking to go into the 30 and the 35. And let's be realistic, they can't do that unless they've got the fights to promote or the fights to put those events on. And so with these new titles, these two new titles, perhaps a third title coming in there, and a host of contenders and skilled fighters that will fill out those cards, you know, this merger really makes sense for the UFC in terms of its ambitions for growth and global domination.
Well, I think, I mean, if you think of all the different fans that, I mean, there's so many fans that complain about every single pay-per-view, but for those fans that were complaining that, you know, it's not worth buying a pay-per-view when there's not a champion or at least a contender, I think this satisfies that urge or that need because, in essence, with seven champions in a perfect world, barring any injuries, now you're going to have not only a potential champion headlining a pay-per-view event, which makes it worth, you know, the fans' hard-earned money to spend it on the pay-per-view. You know, it's $50, $60 sometimes, so the price is up there. But now it makes it worth you pretty much guaranteed a champion to headline the card, and the rest of the card, the four bouts on that main card, you know, they're going to be top contenders in every division.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly right. Is that, I mean, take UFC 122, for example, this card that's being held in Germany and headlined by Nathan Marquardt and Yushin Okami. That's the headline of a UFC-numbered card. And going forward, those are the types of cards that aren't going to sell for the UFC. Granted, this one's on Spike TV. It's not a pay-per-view card, but that's the issue that this merger is hoping to resolve. That's the issue that all these guys coming into the UFC now will hope to tackle. You've got an extra two title fights to throw on a card like that. And we've seen already that Dana White has announced that Jose Aldo will be fighting on the New Year's Eve card, which is actually on the 1st of January this year. And that'll be a double title fight with Edgar fighting Maynard and then Aldo fighting Hominick. Canadian boy, as it were. So, you know, we can already see the immediate effects of these additional two divisions coming in to bolster the UFC lineup. And, you know, it's an exciting time for MMA because you look beyond that now. We've got a solid fight coming up here with GSP and Koscheck. Then 125, you've got two title fights. 126, it's going to be Anderson Silva and Vitor Belfort, plus Ryan Bader and John Jones. I mean, the possibilities are just endless now that we've got those two extra title fights.
And you mentioned Canadian Mark Hominick. We'll be catching up with Canadian Mark Hominick on Monday's episode of MMA Connected. There's no signed deal just yet with Jose Aldo because I believe Mark may still be in a cast. I will know for sure on Monday. But if Mark doesn't fight, I think a fight's going to happen. But if he doesn't fight Jose Aldo, it will be against American Josh Grigsby. For us Canadian guys, we are crossing our fingers that it is going to be Mark Hominick. We'll know for sure on Monday. So make sure you catch MMA Connected. And again, just for the Canadian fans and listeners out there, Sportsnet actually sent me an email earlier this morning and informed me that UFC 122 will air on our network at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet 1, so you can catch it live from Oberhausen, Germany. Nate Marquardt taking on Yushin Okami, with the winner taking on the winner of Anderson Silva and Vitor Belfort, like Kelsey mentioned before. Now, Kelsey, when you take a look at what this means in the future for the UFC, I believe come 2011, I think we're going to see another boom for the organization. We've seen the ebb and flow. You know, it goes up and down, and it's been steady moving up, but I believe it's going to be another boom because, like you say, and we've just discussed, with so many championship fights and high-caliber pay-per-views, I think that means more pay-per-view buys, and I think the average, correct me if I'm wrong, is going to be about 1 million plus.
Every time out, it's tough to say. I mean, I think eventually, you know, we're going to get to the point where we're at least 600 or 700 every time out. But right now, I would maybe have to disagree that we're going to reach 1 million plus. It's too soon. Brock Lesnar is about the only guy that you can really look at as a guaranteed 1 million, and even that's a question mark now that he has lost his title. And I think it's going to take some time for Cain Velasquez to garner the popularity that, or even half the popularity that Brock Lesnar had. But certainly I would agree with the argument that things are looking up and that we're headed towards another prime period for MMA, perhaps a period in which we've never seen before, where it's a consistent year. You know, 2011 could be, from start to finish, the best year that the UFC has ever had. You know, we've seen portions of every year where the UFC has done phenomenal. For example, just this past year, they strung together, what was it, 5 or 6 cards in a row that sold over 500,000 each, which is phenomenal. But imagine a full year's worth of cards that sell over 500,000 pay-per-view buys each. I mean, that's some serious money, serious exposure. And that's when everybody else starts looking at MMA. That's when the big four networks in the U.S. start looking at MMA. That's when the blue-chip sponsors beyond Bud Light start looking at MMA. We're talking consumer electronics or possibly some airlines or possibly some mobile phone carriers beyond just the Boost Mobile prepaid cell phone types. So that's really, you know, the domino effect as I see it, and very exciting.
So what you're saying is my 1 million per event is a little too optimistic.
Yes, I think it's probably a little too optimistic.
Now, taking a look at what just happened this past weekend with Brock Lesnar, you mentioned the guy that consistently gets that 1 million pay-per-view buy for the organization. Now he loses his title. He's suspended for he's suspended for 6 months, 180 days. You know, but I'm sure he has to get that laceration on his face healed up, fixed up before he can do anything. So he's going to be gone potentially until at least the fourth or fifth month of 2011. Cain Velasquez, I know he's doing a media tour very, very soon across North America. I know he's going to be hitting Arizona. He's going to be hitting Miami. He'll actually be coming up here to Toronto. He's going to try and do whatever he can to continue to get his name out there. We saw the first example of getting on the George Lopez show, which is one of my favorite shows, by the way. I absolutely love George Lopez. Huge fan. There's a huge demographic right there. And that's what the UFC was promoting before the event. Cain Velasquez, first ever Mexican heavyweight champion in combat sports. Here's a guy that could potentially, you know, really push the boundaries for the UFC's demographic right across, you know, that Latino fan base that generally is a boxing fan base.
Right.
So when you take a look go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you. I think, you know, there were some people that had their objections to how the UFC promoted that fight. But when you look at it objectively, the UFC was just hedging themselves because they wanted to ensure that regardless of the outcome of the fight, which they obviously can't control, that they were in a good position afterwards. That whoever held the title was somebody that they could promote and that they could market and that they could use to push that heavyweight division forward. Because I think we all remember a time in the UFC's history when the heavyweight division wasn't the strongest. It's since made a ton of progress, and so you want to keep that momentum going. And I think by pushing Cain to the Hispanic audience, UFC may not have the imposing nature of a guy like Brock Lesnar or even, you know, the quality interview that Brock Lesnar provides, but they've got somebody that can draw a different type of audience and rally a potentially very powerful, as you alluded to, combat sports demographic, which is the Latino-Hispanic fan base.
Now, in terms of Cain Velasquez doing what he's doing, and you see this guy really beginning to do what he's doing in terms of the interviews, he's getting better. This is a guy that's very, very shy. I mean, I've been interviewing him since way back UFC 83 in Montreal. He's come a long way, and you're starting to see a different personality coming out. He's always going to be that humble guy. He's not going to – I can't see him changing like some other guys that got a bit of fanfare, and all of a sudden they've got an ego issue. This is a guy that I believe is very humble, comes from humble roots, and I see him as one of those guys. If the UFC markets him correctly, which I'm sure they will because they're a mass marketing machine, they could promote this guy as the baddest man on the planet because he defeated, quote-unquote, the baddest man on the planet. Now, MMA Payout did a phenomenal series taking a look at the UFC's, you know, the best pay-per-view draws. And we saw Brock Lesnar at number one. I believe George St. Pierre was number two. By the end of 2011, should Cain Velasquez continue at least to defend that title two or three times, where would you put Cain Velasquez on that list?
Top five.
Who would be your top five, do you think, in the end of 2011?
Gosh, I mean, it's so tough to say. Now, GSP, I think, obviously will remain there as one of the top guys.
What about Jose Aldo?
Jose Aldo, it's very interesting. I think he would be up there for consideration because he'll be fighting, hopefully, on that January 1st card, so that will count. You know, you consider that he's maybe in there for another two or three defenses afterwards should he get by Mark or Josh or whoever he fights. Depending on how many fights Shogun has, I mean, I think that, you know, and really just looking at it objectively, all of the title holders should be, if they retain their belts, the top seven draws. Because that's the way the system works, is that the title events sell 2x of whatever a non-title event sells. So I think the average is somewhere right now around 600,000 pay-per-view buys compared to 350.
Okay.
And so, you know, looking at that list, I would expect Cain to be in there probably at the 3, 4, or 5 position if he holds the belt. You know, Brock, I think, is a non-title holder. He'll probably be up there, too, because he's always going to draw a crowd, especially if he wins his next fight out. You know, if they do book that next fight against Frank Mir and he wins that and then he goes on to fight somebody else, I think he'll definitely be in there. But it'll be really interesting.
We got about 30 seconds left in this segment there, Kelsey. Let me throw one name at you because you mentioned Mauricio Shogun Hua, who's the current UFC light heavyweight champion. Let me throw a curveball into this equation and start thinking for the next 12 to 13 months. Well, starting off in January or February, John Bones Jones, if this guy becomes the UFC light heavyweight champion, where does he fit on this list?
If John Bones, I mean, I think he's going to beat Bader, and it really all depends on whether Rashad Evans can take out Shogun, because Jones and Evans have said that they will not fight each other, and if Evans does beat Shogun, then you know, that's obviously off the table. But if Shogun beats Evans, I think Jones is one more fight away from getting a title shot, and you know, I have to say that I like Jones against pretty much anybody in the light heavyweight division right now.
There you have it, Kelsey. Thank you very much for your time.
No problem, Joe. Anytime.
There you have it. Kelsey Philpott, Managing Editor for MMAPayout.com. Coming up after the break, I'll be joined by the newly signed UFC welterweight Sean Pearson. You're listening to The Showdown, brought to you by CaptainSave.com on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Welcome back to the Showdown, brought to you by CaptainSave.com. Make sure you sign up at CaptainSave.com to get your email of the day to get discounts on stuff that you love, want, and need. Available at CaptainSave.com. My name is Showdown Joe, special guest in studio. It's been a long time coming. Literally, when I first came on the air in April of 2007, I believe, this is one guy that I've wanted in the studio for such a long time. Very good friend of mine, officially signed with the UFC. Opponent, we'll talk about that momentarily, but officially signed with the UFC, and like I said, a long time coming. Look up his record online. His name is Sean Pearson. Sean, welcome to the studio.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Appreciate it.
All right. Big news, obviously, with the UFC merging with the WEC. But first of all, we'll get your thoughts on that. And for those that don't know, Sean is fairly an outspoken individual. Actually, he's getting a little older, so he's sort of taming himself. But
old.
All right, so you're not getting old. So there you go. See, I can't even finish a sentence. This is what my life is all about whenever I'm with Sean. I can't finish a sentence because if I call him old, he's going to rip me apart. And God forbid I get in the actual gym with this guy. I take an absolute beating. But the good news, Sean, you finally made it to the big show. It's been a long time coming. The journey to get there, it's safe to say it's been up and down.
Oh, for sure. I think like a lot of people's careers, nothing was really given to me. I worked, you know, the worker's way up. You know what I mean? I've done my time. I've been in the game 11 years. Made some bad choices early in my career, but, you know, I looked to fix all that and just got back on track and started training properly. And, you know, good things come to those who wait. And here I am.
Now, you say 11 years. October 9th, 1999 was the first fight you ever had. That was against Steve Vigneault. You actually fought him three times. I'll do my best not to bring up the third fight, even though I did bring it up, because that's a bitter pill for you to continue to swallow.
Yeah, it's a bitter pill, but you know what I mean? I love Steve, so he gets his win there. But, you know, I'll still look at that tape and know that I won the fight. But again, you know, you can't ever leave a fight in the judges' decisions, and it's my fault.
All right, Steve Vigneault was the first guy you fought, like we just mentioned, October 9th, 1999, in the IFC. Now, there's a name from the past. Now, did you think ever at that point there you would one day make it to the big show like the UFC? Because back then, the UFC was still the big show at the same time, but you were just getting started fighting on, that was in Montreal. You fought on the Kahnawake Indian Reserve. Everybody knows about that place. If you don't know your mixed martial arts history, do some research for those events that happened on the Kahnawake Indian Reserve. Since then, you've had an up and down sort of record, but then you've really pulled off an incredible winning streak. You won five in a row, which basically put you on the radar for the UFC. But before you even got to the UFC, you originally signed with Bellator. You're supposed to fight in the first round of their welterweight tournament last season, but a knee injury pulled you out. Don't you find this sort of a weird sort of circumstance?
You know, it's like a lot of people tell me, when one door closes, another one opens. And, you know, I was thankful to be signed to Bellator. It was my first big opportunity. I got injured. I didn't know. It could have been career ending. I had no idea at the time. And like Joe said, I think, you know, he thinks I'm getting older, but I don't think so. But again, you know, I'm mature, not old. But I thought, you know, this might be the end of my career. But I got better quick. Unfortunately for me at the time, Bellator didn't have any spots open for me. So, you know, I'm grateful they gave me my release. Now, with that, you know, a lot of people think, oh, you got released from Bellator. That's not a great thing. But at the same time, it opened up another door. I went and fought another local fight out in W1, great organization out in Halifax. I got a win, and another opportunity comes knocking. And this has been my dream since, I'd say, 1993. I remember sitting on my couch at my parents' house. We rented UFC 1 with all my friends. I think it was 134 pounds at the time. And I remember telling everybody, I want to do that. And everybody laughed at me.
You were 134 pounds?
I wrestled my grade 9 year at 97 pounds.
You.
Yeah, 97.
Wow. I've seen you reach, what, 220, 230?
228 and a half, I think, is my record. Unofficial. I was probably a little heavier than that, but, you know.
That was in between, like, big-time fights, like just not fighting at all.
Yeah, that was when I sort of quit after my third Vigneault fight.
Yeah.
I had enough with MMA at the time. I didn't really like what was going on, and I, you know, started a family, got my life together, and then, you know, the sport being what it is, amazing, just drew me back to it.
Yeah, because that Vigneault fight was in September of 2003, and then your next bout was March 17th, 2007. So there's a valid excuse as to why you were dipping and indulging in some of the food that you were eating. But since then, you've had an unbelievable record. I think you've gone 6-1. You're on a five-fight winning streak. But the second to last fight, I want to talk about Fabio Holando, by the way, who says hi. I had a chance to speak with him and Patrick Cote while we were covering UFC 121 in Anaheim. That Fabio Holando fight really raised some eyebrows. It was a minute and 41. You finished off Fabio in the first round. Take us back to that fight, because it was one of those fights where a lot of pressure was on you facing a guy that's got a pretty good, you know, reputation in mixed martial arts, and especially in the Brazilian jiu-jitsu community.
It was a huge fight for me, and it wasn't just that I was fighting Fabio. It was the fact that, you know, I knew that there was a lot running on the line for it. I thought even then there was rumors that the UFC was looking at, you know, Holanda for me. You know, if he beat me, maybe he was getting a shot in there. And I think it was a lot of pressure on me to just go in there and do what I have to do, which is how it is in every fight now. I just had to step it up. The fight, I started off slow, not the way I wanted to. And then, you know, after you get hit, you realize it's a fight. And I was like, okay, it's on. Let's get this done.
You know what? Before we get to the Ricky Goodall fight that you had this past weekend, can you explain that to some of the fans listening in, that sometimes it takes guys to get hit to wake up? Because I know you to be pretty aggressive when the time comes. You don't take crap from anyone, let alone real life, but just in the cage or in the ring. When it's time for Sean Pearson to fight, boom, you kick it up a notch. But then there's also times when it's like, you know, you're set in your ways, and then you got to get hit to really start picking it up a notch. Can you explain that to the fans?
Well, for me, what it is, first of all, you always got to keep your adrenaline in check. With Holanda, I respected him a lot. I thought this could go three rounds. So I didn't want to come out like a sprint. You know what I mean? I needed a better strategy than that. I'm like, okay, let's come out. Let's pace ourselves. But my problem was I didn't pace myself like I should in a fight. I paced myself like it was sparring. A lot of times when you spar with somebody, you start off at a slower pace, and then you pick up the pace and you pick up the intensity as your sparring session goes on. So both guys are warm by the time you're actually swinging at each other. Well, I did that in the fight. I came out, you know, sort of pawn a little bit at Holanda, little weak leg kick here, and you know, Holanda wasn't in for that. He was throwing hard right from the start. And that's how I should have been. And once I got hit, I was like, okay, I'm in a fight. Let's fix this. And really, my ego got hurt more than anything else. I got put down, and I'm like, okay, get up. You know, I've got my friends, my family, my reputation. I've trained hard for that fight. There's no way it was going to end like that. And I got up and got my chance to put it on him, and I put it on him.
Now, this past weekend, you took on Ricky Goodall, a pretty tough welterweight from Canada's East Coast, but it was another bout that you were able to finish in the first round, this one at 144, and it's pretty much the catalyst that got you into the UFC because, again, you look at these bouts here, I'll rhyme off the five in a row. Jacob McDonald, first round, you finished him off at 145. Iraj Hadeen, first round, 2 minutes and 55 seconds. Jason Roerson, 3 minutes and 57 seconds in the first round. Of course, Fabio, 141, and then Ricky Goodall this past weekend, 1 minute and 44 seconds. This is the fight that was the catalyst to officially that got the UFC saying, you know what, maybe it is time for Sean Pearson to come into the big show. Talk about that fight there. Did you realize that there was any extra pressure going into this bout, or was it business as usual?
Really, it wasn't added pressure. But again, every fight from now on is pressure. And that's how I have to fight. You have to fight like this is the last fight of your life. Because in the UFC, anywhere else, you're only as good as your last fight. Fans are finicky. You know, yep. What I mean? You've got your true supporters, and then you've got guys who love to see you fight until you lose. And I understand it. It's hard to take as a fighter because we all lose. It just happens. But, you know, that whole, you know, he's overrated or he wasn't that good, no one wants that. So when you go in there, it's like, this is my last fight ever. I better win. I'm gonna stop it right here. And I go in there, and I just have to take care of business. If the opportunity presents itself that I need to finish a guy, or if it's available, I'm going to take it.
Now, with a record of 10-4, you're in the big show. Apparently taking on the rumors out there as you're taking on Matt Riddle. He's, an Ultimate Fighter alumni, if I'm not mistaken. I think season 5 or 5 or 6?
I thought it was actually season 9.
Season 9, so it was a pretty recent season. So he's a tough welterweight. He's actually fought at middleweight as well. Now, you're looking to improve your record to 11-4. Should Riddle be the opponent? I believe he's a southpaw, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think he's a southpaw, or a converted southpaw.
Now, With your wrestling background, let's talk about that first before we get into the Riddle fight. You've got a Greco-Roman background as well as some freestyle wrestling. Talk about your experience in wrestling in general.
I wrestled for about 20 years. I've wrestled since grade 4, actually. I've got a national championship under my belt, university national championship, Greco senior national champ. A lot of experience in there, a lot of matches. But the truth is, when everybody wants to talk about wrestling and wrestling pedigrees, the funny thing is it's MMA. And wrestling and MMA and wrestling, they're not the same thing. Don't get me wrong. There's a huge advantage to having that wrestling background. But I've watched Tito Ortiz out-wrestle Machenko, or I can't even pronounce his real name.
Machenko, yep.
When pedigree-wise, Tito's not even close to him. George has out-wrestled Koscheck in the past. And pedigree-wise, they're not close either. There's a translation there, but it's not a direct translation. Because if your striking is that much better, your wrestling becomes that much better. Because people are always threatened. They have to keep their hands up. As soon as you're not a threat standing up, your wrestling weakens a bit. So, I don't like to go on pedigrees, but, I'm confident in my wrestling, especially in MMA, so I think it'll be a good match.
Well, your wrestling is so good. Let's be honest for a second. During the recording, people that watched the primetime with George St. Pierre and Dan Hardy, if they paid close attention to some of the guys that were part of George St. Pierre's camp, they would have seen your face. George specifically, or at least Faraz or the team, brought you in to not only help as a sparring partner, but to keep George's wrestling on par. Am I correct?
Yeah, I went out there to help George, and in turn, he helps me. But obviously, I'm the wrestler in the camp, or one of the many wrestlers in his camp, because he really likes to wrestle a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I take great, you know, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for is, but, you know,
Proud?
Yeah, I'm proud of the fact that, you know, he respects me that much. And when we spar, George and me, you know, good training partners, and we work well together. So it's been a great, you know, sort of like a partnership right now.
So is he going to bring you, or at least, well, you guys are both training for the same night. Any plans on going out to see Faraz and the boys over at TriStar?
Yeah, I left George a message tonight. So I'm hoping to hook up with those guys, go down there for at least a week. I talked to Dennis Kang at my fight last week, and he'd love to have me down too. So, and he's fighting, I believe, on the 18th in the next W1 card. So there'll be a lot of guys training for fights. So I'm hoping to get down there and get some good training in.
How do we know if George is going to take you guys out for lobster again so we can make sure that you're not eating any lobster as you get prepared for this fight and have to cut weight like a madman?
I only weigh 171 pounds, so I never cut weight. But we'll definitely, if George offers to take us out for lobster, we're getting lobster because that is good stuff.
Yeah, now talk about George, you know, because he's going to want to prepare for his bout versus Josh Koscheck, obviously the best welterweight in the world. And I've maintained that you are one of the best welterweights in this country. Obviously, George St. Pierre being the best in the world, but guys like yourself and Ryan Ford, who got your Claude Patrick, who's also from Toronto, TJ Grant, Jesse Bongfield, lots of good welterweights in this country. But you get a chance to train one-on-one with George. How does he improve your game without stating the obvious that he's the best in the world? But what does he do? What do you think this time around is going to be the difference when you get there and realize that you're not just a sparring partner for George, all of you guys are preparing for one night?
The truth is, like, confidence is the big thing. When you train with the best, you realize you're prepared for the best. And that's the biggest thing for me. I'm training with the best guy in the world, and I'm hanging in there. You know what I mean? And we're doing well together. It gives me the confidence in these other fights where it's like, no, I belong here. It's not like maybe I'm over my head. I'm like, I'm not over my head anywhere. I'm here to fight, and I'm going to put it on this guy. So that's the number one thing. And also, George's got a great work ethic. So it motivates me when I see, you know, George's like, let's go. You know, I'm always staying with him. Wherever he goes, I'm going. So if we're doing 2 days or 3 days, you know, it gets me, my camp kickstarted and says, when I come back home, I'm like, I need the same thing. I'm, you know, telling everybody, no, we need to change camp up. We need to do this more, that more.
Do the guys here pay attention to that?
Oh, for sure. Everybody here is great. And it's always been hard for me. I work full time. You know what I mean? So it's never been the guys don't train enough, although it's been difficult, you know, working around hours because, you know, a lot of the pro guys like to train during the day. If I'm at work, I come at night. There's not as many guys to spar. But at the same time, you know, Sam, Claude, Misha, Bruckman, all the guys at Grant Brothers, they try and accommodate the best they can, and everybody's been cool. But now it's going to be different for this fight. I'm, you know, going to talk with work, and we're going to figure something out, and I'm training full-time for this fight.
Absolutely, Matt. Like I said, we got about 30 seconds here. Matt Riddle is no joke. We'll go extensive after the break here talking about Matt Riddle. But on the surface, when you look at a guy like that, I think it's a good matchup for you. I think it's going to be a great fight. Chances are you're going to be a prelim fight, probably within the first, second, or third fight. Are you nervous as we start to get closer to the date?
Not yet. Don't get me wrong. I'm nervous for every fight. It doesn't matter who it is. Matt doesn't he doesn't bring any new challenges to the table. He's just a tough guy. You know, good wrestling pedigree. He's going to have good stand up. He's going to have good jits. But it's a fight, so I'm going to go in there and I'm going to put my hands on him and we're going to see what happens.
All right, we'll hear more from Sean Pearson, the newest UFC signee in the welterweight division, coming up after the break. You're listening to The Showdown, brought to you by CaptainSave.com on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Welcome back to The Showdown, brought to you by Captain Save. Make sure you visit CaptainSave.com to sign up and get your email a day in your inbox to get up to 90% discounts on items you love, want, and need. Once again, CaptainSave.com. My name is Showdown Joe, special guest in studio, one of Canada's best welterweights, now officially signed with the UFC. Apparently taking on Matt Riddle is the rumored opponent at UFC 124, the same evening, December 11th, as George St. Pierre takes on Josh Koscheck. My man, Sean Pearson. Sean, let's look at Matt Riddle as an opponent. Like you mentioned, he potentially doesn't bring any new challenges, but he's a guy that's going to scrap it out. The one thing he does have over you is experience inside the octagon. And that's the one thing that many fighters and many people talk about is that octagon jitters. The debut fight, a lot of guys succumb to that pressure, big lights, all the different media stuff that you have to do, all the different interviews and stuff like that. how are you planning to prepare for all of that?
You know, I'll probably dance a little bit. Probably make sure that, you know, I'm shaved up good just to look pretty. A lot of people are going to be watching me. Again, I'm just going to do my best to look pretty in there and do my thing. I can't say I'm not going to have the jitters. I can't say I will have the jitters because the truth is I have no idea, and I probably will. But, you know, it's how I prepare and how I get over it and how I react when I'm in there. And I'm comfortable with it. It's not my first time in the octagon. It's not even my first time fighting at the Bell Center. I've done that too. So I'm going to go in there, and again, I'm just going to put my hands on them, and it becomes a fight. The jitters all happen before. They happen after. But once we get our hands on each other, it's a fight.
It's the same with what a lot of guys say. You know, it's craziness beforehand. They don't realize till, you know, after it's all said and done, their first fight in the UFC. It's craziness beforehand. But once that cage door shuts, you start getting those thoughts, what am I doing here? Am I ready for this? Am I ready? Right? Once you guys tangle, once you guys start banging away at each other and start connecting with shots, it's a whole new ball game. Talk to me about certain, like, I mean, we can't talk about the UFC fight just yet because we don't know what's going to happen. But talk to me about a situation when you fight in front of a large crowd. I harken back to that Vigneault fight. You know, once you're inside the realm of combat, can you hear the fans? Do you hear them at all? Or do you just hear your corner and focus, focus, focus?
No, you can hear certain things. Like when a loud chant goes through the audience, which I better be getting at the UFC being a Canadian, but you can hear it. You can live off the, you know, move off of the crowd and stuff, and it's great. But at the same time, you don't hear as much as people think. Like, people are like, did you hear me yelling that? I'm like, no, I can barely hear my corner sometimes. You got to choose when and when not to listen. Like, everybody says you got to listen all the time, but that's tough. I know when I hear, I can focus on my corner's voice and be like, okay. I also know when I should be listening. You know, if I get a small spot where I'm stopped, you know, I can hear breathe, Sean, or Sean, attack far side. So I get things in there, but you don't listen to every word that's being said. It can't be done. You can't focus on that many different things. I'm sure, you know, some people will say I hear everything, but I don't think it's possible. I think you got to focus on key words, short phrases, and be ready for it. So that's what you prepare for in practice. Phrases.
How do you plan out, like, who's going to be in the corner? Like, I know it's still 5 or 6 weeks old, but are we assuming that it's going to be RG and Sam and perhaps Wooly?
I didn't even know I got three corners.
Okay, so at least if you get two.
If I got two, it's going to be Sam and RG for sure. If I had a third, it would probably be Wooly.
Now, Adrian Wooly, he's a W1 Bantamweight champion, another tough guy. The reason why I bring this up, and I've never seen RG corner. Now, RG Grant is he not one of the nicest guys you've ever come across? Calm.
Easiest guy to get along with. Vibes really well with everybody.
Yep.
And then when it's time to coach, though.
Totally different?
Oh, yeah, he's coaching.
Okay, so when you have RG on one side, Sam on the other side, and Wooly, because the last thing you want is Wooly's blood to start boiling, how do you decipher when those three guys are potentially going to be yelling at you and telling you what to do? You have to lay it down and say, I'm only listening to one guy unless I'm in the stand-up, I'm listening to RG. If I'm on the ground, I'll listen to Sam. Wrestling, I'll listen to Wooly.
Yeah, that's really, and they have to work together because, you know, wrestling and stand-up and wrestling and ground can all intermix, so... When I'm standing predominantly, I'm going to be listening to RG. But if I start hearing Wooly, that means they should have discussed something, and Wooly's telling me it's time to wrestle. And that's how I coach Wooly, because I manage and coach Wooly as well. And, you know, usually if it's RG or Allen and Wooly's stand-up corner, as soon as Wooly hears me, we've known each other for 20 years, you know, he knows, okay, Sean, it's time to wrestle. That means, you know, I'm not comfortable with you standing up right now. We need to change the pace. We need to wrestle up in this match. And then when it hits the ground, if I'm still yelling, it's basically saying, okay, we're going to stay safe for a minute. If Sam takes over, it's like, it's time for jits.
Yeah, okay. That makes total sense. I mean, I just tried to think of the dichotomy of having those three characters, because all three guys can be pretty vocal and can really, it doesn't matter what the crowd is, yelling, screaming, booing. When one of those three guys starts going, at least two of the three, like I said, I don't know RG. I've never seen RG coach. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, when he's coaching, because I know RG to be one of the nicest guys, very calm, very soft-spoken, but I can just imagine when this guy's going to be in your corner come December 11th, it's going to be crazy. One thing I do want to ask you, though, is you've been around the game for a long time. You've seen a guy like myself, George St. Pierre, a guy that, you know, started in the UCC, Universal Combat Challenge, to become the best in the world. And there's so many different attributes that make George St. Pierre who he is today. And one of those things is accessibility to the media, doing the interviews. Are you preparing yourself now and understanding that, you know, as you get closer to a fight, you've got to minimize the media stuff, or are you going to say, you know what, I'm going to do as much as I can. I got to get my name out there. Because the one thing that I try and preach all the time, you and I have talked about this on numerous occasions, but we've never done that on the air. The importance of doing those interviews, the importance of even talking to those high school kids that are doing blogs, because your interview will get picked up. You're a UFC fighter right now. The more eyeballs, or the more eardrums, the more people that are seeing you and hearing you, the more sponsorship dollars you're going to get. Because we know coming into the UFC, your paycheck isn't going to be as big as George St. Pierre's, but you can make up some extra money with sponsorship. How are you planning on dealing with the extra media hype? And I'll give you an example after you give me an answer.
Well, the truth is I've always been pretty open to the media. You know, some people probably say too open. Like, I love it. You know, I love being the center of attention. I can't deny that. I like that. I like this part about this sport, that the glory's mine. When I'm in there, if I win, the glory's mine. At the same time, when I lose, you know, it's not shame, but you feel, as a fighter, you feel the shame is mine.
You feel alone.
Yeah, and I like that about this sport. And I love the attention I get with the media. And again, I try and be a strong role model now. Like, I've changed from my past. And again, not that I was a poor role model when I was younger, but I made bad decisions because, you know, I was a little bit more flamboyant, and I'm still... You know, I'm still Sean, the old Pimp Daddy Pearson sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just very little bit of the time now. And that's just me trying to have some fun with things. Like, the cocky, conceited part of me is really just me joking around. But at the same time, some people, it comes off the wrong way, and I understand that. And at the same time, I'm a father now.
I'm telling you right now, before you get into the whole father thing, you have no idea, win or lose, how many haters you're going to have.
Oh, always. There's always, and there's haters now. There's haters that Sean got his ticket to the UFC, and I understand that. But when it comes down to it, if I can be a role model to a few people and, you know.
You'll have lots of fans, Sean.
I'm cool with that. Oh, no, but there's going to be haters. There's always haters. I'm cool with that.
Start building that thick skin. That's all I'm saying.
But to me, it's more about, like, I've got my students, I've got my son, and I just, the thing about me that I like, that I can respect about myself, is that I had a dream, 15 years ago? And it's all coming true right now. And to me, it's like a lot of people told me I should quit this game. You're not going to make any money in it. You're not going to. I didn't do this for the money. I do this because I love the sport, and my dream was to be in the UFC. And after 15 years, I finally got my shot. And it's like just a little bit of a jab to a lot of the people that said, you can't do it. You know, it's a little bit of the, you know, here's the middle finger. You know,
can I have their name and number?
Yeah, I can do what I want to do because, like anyone says, you know, limitation is only your imagination. And that's what I live by. That's what I want my son to live by.
Absolutely. There you have it. Sean Pearson, UFC welterweight, making his debut. Rumor has it, Matt Riddle, UFC 124, the same card as George St. Pierre when he takes on Josh Koscheck. Lots of eyeballs will be watching that show. Now let's remove away from this whole Sean Pearson making his UFC debut, and let's have a conversation, the ones that you and I always have, the arguments, the fact that you disagree with pretty much, not 90%, but at least a good portion of what I say, especially my rankings, because I don't have
John. Pound for
pound. Oh, whatever. Sean, because I don't have John Jones in my top 10. Let's go through some of the stuff that, you know, for those that are listening right now, the one thing I want to mention to you, Sean, the reason why I did bring up the whole appearance thing, there's an appearance coming up with myself, MMA promotional model Angie Chessman, and Mark Hominick, hopefully at Filthy McNasty's for UFC 122. I'd like to bring you out to that if possible, because in future I want to do more appearances with you, because I want all the guys in the GT area, in the city that I live in, to get as much exposure with all the fans. Get out there, take the pictures with the fans. They're the ones that are going to support and buy the tickets. They're the ones that, you know, are going to actually, that like you said, your son, the little guy, when that 8-year-old comes up and his dad comes to get an autograph and his 8-year-old sees, oh my God, I met Sean Pearson, that kid's going to be a fan for life.
What's funny is people have asked for my autograph in the past, and I've always felt like I'd always give it. But in my head, I'm like, I'm nobody. Do you mean like I know everybody else who's in the game, and I always feel like I haven't done enough to deserve this
it's
autograph.
It's cool. It's a surreal feeling.
But now, like, at least, you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm here now. And I know that I haven't done anything in the UFC. I haven't even had a fight yet. But at least I can validate myself saying, you know, I'm qualified to be there. I'm qualified. I've earned my right to say that, you know, I can fight in the UFC. And that's, you know, my goals.
All right. Let's have some rapid fire stuff here right now. We got about 3.5 minutes to the end of the show. First things first, the big news today. We heard from Kelsey Philpott, managing editor from MMAPayout.com in the first segment. Let me get your thoughts on the WEC merging with the UFC. Dana White said it was just all about timing. This is something that should have been done a very long time ago. My other argument that I wrote today on showdown.ca and the Fan 590 blog and Sportsnet.ca is I would like to have seen the WEC stay, but be more of a feeder league to the UFC. They're saying no. They're going to amalgamate everything. They're bringing in the bantamweights and the featherweights and perhaps introducing the flyweights very, very soon. What do you make and what are your thoughts on this UFC and WC merger?
Well, once again, we'll disagree because to me, the WC being a feeder system, then who's going to really want to fight in the WEC? Because that's really what all these other shows are about. Now you've got Zuffa with control over both the feeder system and the main show. So to me, it...
Patrick Cote, Gabriel Gonzaga got cut.
Yeah.
Why let other organizations scoop them up when you can keep them in the WEC if the WEC had all the weight categories?
100%. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but at the same time, you've now got Patrick Cote who, let's say all of a sudden, you know, I'm going to say, you know, the bad guys right now, Strikeforce, want to scoop them up for good money. Well, as Patrick Cote is a fighter, that might be a very good opportunity. Now, we're not going to see that, you know, if Patrick Cote, you know, in the next five fights, hopefully wins all five of his next fights. You know, you've got a great fighter now over in Strikeforce. But from a fighter's perspective, that's better for him because he was able to earn that income right now rather than going down to the WC, might getting a, and again, we don't know how the pay structure would have been in a feeder system versus the UFC. So I'm just saying by getting that release, just like I got released from Bellator, well, doors open for me. So there's an opportunity there as a fighter when I get released to go somewhere else, you know, or get my wins in a smaller organization and get called back up by the UFC, and that's amazing. But if I'm kept in, you know, sort of the organization, I just don't know how the pay structure would have worked. So
yeah, again, the pay structure, like the way I worked it out, the pay structure would have been much lower. If you, it's like a two-way contract in hockey. You play for the NHL, you get paid big money. If you get sent down to the AHL, which in this case would have been the WC, your paycheck gets cut. Yeah.
And the only other thing, and I think it's awesome that the UFC is now going to have the lightweights because everybody asks, oh, do you fight in the UFC? And I've experienced
that
my whole life.
Is.
So all the light guys were sort of like, you know, it's not really a fair question because there was no UFC for them. You know what I mean? The WEC was the UFC. Now, I'm sort of sad in a way because I love WEC events. So whenever a WEC event would go up, I know I'm going to go watch the light guys bang it out. So it was always sort of like, okay, this is going to be a nice banger show. And now it's going to be in the UFC, so depending on how the cards go, you know, I don't want to miss that. I like seeing, you know, three or four fights in 155, 145, or 135. They're all exciting for me. They're all great. But I know I'm not seeing the Brock Lesnar, Cain Velasquez on the main event. I'm seeing this event for a different reason. And, you know, now I'm going to be a little sad depending on how the UFC structures it on what's going on there. But I'm sure, you know, the UFC's done everything else so amazing. I'm sure it'll work out fine as well.
We got about 30 seconds till we wrap up the show here. Give me your thoughts real quick. Did you? I predicted Cain Velasquez while I was, you know, before I went down Anaheim, had a great time covering it. But real quick, Cain Velasquez over Brock Lesnar, did you see it coming?
I saw the possibility, but I still thought I was going to pick Brock. And, you know, I know you have your predictions, but you had Brock Lesnar in, like, your number four pound-for-pound heavyweight.
He wasn't in my pound-for-pound.
He's been in your pound-for-pound before.
So, no, he wasn't.
Yeah, until I told you to take him out because he's a heavyweight. But, you know what I mean, so you saying he's going to lose, you still had him in your top 10 pound-for-pound until we had the argument that a heavyweight shouldn't be in there, especially one that weighs 300 pounds.
Wrong radio host.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Well, I revisited my pound for pound, that's for sure. And I've got a new one listed up at show.ca as well as sportsnet.ca. First and foremost, I want to thank you very much for coming in. I'm getting a feeling you're going to be a regular host or regular co-host.
No, you're right, host.
Regular co-host on the show here. Sean, thank you much for coming in.
Thanks, I appreciate it, Joe.
There you have it. Sean Pearson, newly signed UFC welterweight. Once again, you've been listening to The Showdown, brought to you by Captain Save on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.